This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard Austin there. No pomp, no Joe. Donnie Chedrick with you on 93.7 The Fan until 2. Pomp not usually in on Fridays. Joe on a golf course. Could probably get used to that as the weather starts to get a little bit nicer. They both need each other right now. That's not about Joe and Pomp. That's not about me or Austin. That's about Aaron Rodgers and the Pittsburgh Steelers. We've heard that from a few different voices around the NFL. Mike Florio said it with us on Wednesday. Adam Schefter said it with an ESPN station in Milwaukee this week. Schefter also added another layer to the onion, and maybe a reason why Rodgers doesn't need the Steelers the way they seem to need him. Schefter is not convinced that Rodgers wants to play. And he won't be until he hears Rodgers say it. Now, a few things here that are at play. Those two, notably, do not care for each other. Rodgers told Schefter to, quote, lose his number in one of his McAfee appearances last season. Schefter just sounds like he is tired of talking about Aaron Rodgers, even though that's part of what he gets paid to do. But just listen to any piece of audio with Schefter when Rodgers is the topic. It seems like he is pretty tired of the song and dance. We really don't know what is going to happen here. We are just pretty sure. We have people saying a 99.9% chance, but we cannot say for certain. When will it happen? No idea. I don't have any better knowledge than Austin. Austin doesn't have any better knowledge than me. We don't have any better knowledge than Bill Tobin's neighbor. His neighbor, the postman, who doesn't even have season tickets to the NFL. You know that reference, Austin? Do you know what that moment is from?
I think I do. The Colts?
Yes. So Bill Tobin was the GM of the Colts at the time this happened. That was in the during the 1994 NFL draft. Because Mel Kiper called out Bill Tobin for not selecting either of the two quarterbacks that were slated as early picks in that draft. And can you name either one?
And what did he say? Who the hell's Mel Kiper, right?
Yes. They sent it down to Chris Mortensen, who interviewed Bill Tobin. He said, who the hell is Mel Kiper anyway? And then he later said he doesn't know any more than my neighbor. My neighbor's a postman, and he doesn't even have season tickets to the NFL.
1994 draft. I don't think I'm going to pull one out of my behind and pull a pony and automatically be able to know this.
One of them is a tough name to remember because unless you venture into the political side of things, you might not even know the guy's name. The other one you definitely know, but he did not have what I would call a good NFL career. He won a Super Bowl.
Dilfer?
Trent Dilfer is one of them. Heath Shuler is the other one.
Yeah, I wouldn't have got Heath Shuler.
He got drafted by the then Redskins. Washington also drafted a local star, Gus Frerotte, in the same draft, who ended up supplanting and playing better than Heath Shuler did. But yeah, that's from the 94 draft. That was like one of the first times that people were like, okay, this is a pretty good TV event. I have a friend that has a job with one of the major networks that carries the NFL's product. He's not on screen. He's just a behind-the-scenes guy. He texted me Wednesday night. The Rodgers move is getting announced either tonight, meaning Wednesday, or tomorrow morning, meaning Thursday. That was the text to me. Did we get the Rodgers announcement Wednesday night? No. Did we get the Rodgers announcement yesterday morning? No. Did we get the Rodgers announcement at all yesterday? No. And I don't fault my buddy for that. Because my response to him right off the bat was, yeah, I've been hearing that for a few weeks now. Because it seems like every couple of days, somebody out there, surprisingly not Pony, has pretty much guaranteed that Aaron Rodgers will announce that he is joining the Steelers on a particular day. The statute's going to run out on a lot of people. Like, there should not be a claim if you said on March 7th, right before free agency, or I guess we even get into the first week of free agency, like March 11th or 12th, hey, Rodgers is going to pick the Steelers today. You don't get to claim that multiple weeks later. Because we just don't know. Nobody knows. And that's how Rodgers likes it. He says he doesn't want to be the center of attention, but he loves being the guy that holds the cards. Does anyone with the McAfee clan know? Certainly doesn't seem that way. Our buddy Mark Cabali doesn't know. This would be leaps and bounds the biggest story of his career. Would be the biggest story of Cabali's career if he broke it. He's under that McAfee umbrella. That is a massive story that he can have the lead on over pretty much every other insider. And that includes Schefter, because we know that Rodgers hates him. Probably hates Rap Sheet as well. And that's no shot at Mark. That's not what I'm getting to. Who will join Pony for an hour later today, by the way, like he always does on Friday. That is just a way to illustrate how unknown all of this is. We are all playing a guessing game. As we add another layer to the onion, Kevin Seifert, who covers the Vikings for ESPN, he's their Brooke Pryor. His headline story from Wednesday night read this. The Vikings want J.J. McCarthy as QB1, but they won't rule out further talks with Aaron Rodgers. So is the Vikings thing over? It doesn't appear that way, based on that. This goes back to another theory on Rodgers, that he will wait it out as long as possible in case a team that is a true contender loses its quarterback, and then maybe they'll call. Now, that's a dangerous game to play. Because what if that doesn't happen? Or what if it does happen, but that team says, our offense is just way too different than what Aaron Rodgers can run? Like, if that happened to the Ravens, if Lamar Jackson went down, I don't know if their first phone call is to Aaron Rodgers, because quarterback mobility is their whole offense. What Lamar Jackson can do is quite different than what Aaron Rodgers at 41 years old can do. So it might be different situations depending on the teams, and not just any contender will call Aaron Rodgers. But say if Cincinnati lost Joe Burrow, that might be a phone call to Aaron Rodgers. Hey, Aaron, we have Ja'Marr Chase, we have T. Higgins. We just lost our franchise quarterback for the season. You want to do this thing. You don't have much of a defense. So I think there are teams that could lose their quarterbacks and could call Rodgers in that case. But again, dangerous game. There's no guarantee of that. If the Vikings don't love the recovery process of McCarthy, they could pick up the phone and they could dial Rodgers' number. The Vikings, we saw last season behind Sam Darnold, a 14-win team. 14 wins. That team is pretty close to truly competing in the game's biggest game. They're close. It's a great team. It's a great roster that might just be missing a quarterback. I think that's why he's waiting them out for as long as he is. I think it's pretty clear that of the options that were presented to us about Aaron Rodgers, when it was the Steelers, the Giants, the Vikings, or retirement, or other, I guess, I think it's pretty clear that the Vikings were his preferred team. That should be pretty clear. No matter if anybody comes out and says it directly, but just read the tea leaves there. I think if the Vikings made the call, this would already be over. And I guess they still could, according to Kevin Seifert, if they aren't sold on what they see from J.J. McCarthy. So we really don't know how or when this is going to conclude. There's even some speculation that this is all just a big ruse, and Rodgers is going to pop out on stage with Pat McAfee and the boys on April 9th in Pittsburgh and announce that he's the Steelers' next quarterback. Man, that really has to make you feel like the Steelers have control of the situation. We really don't know what will happen here. I just think my best guess, and that's what it is, tells me that Aaron Rodgers will be a Steeler. But it's all just a guess. I saw the tweet from Mark Cabali the other day about what the Steelers have gone through at quarterback, because it has not been pretty. It has not been pretty at all. What has happened since Ben Roethlisberger retired? What they have faced at quarterback? The Steelers have started 5 different quarterbacks in 5 straight season openers. And that will be the case again, which is why Mark included 5 in there. We know it won't be Justin Fields. And they have now turned over their entire quarterback room 2 years in a row. That is the type of thing that our dads warned us about, Austin. I guess I can't speak for Mr. Bechtold at home in Baldwin, but I know that my dad, for years, he said, even when Ben gets old, he might not look as good, but you better cherish what he's done, because I have a feeling it won't be too easy after that. And he just said, I'll present to you the mid to late 80s and most of the 90s Steelers, what he called the dark years. And yeah, baby, we're in them.
I did that with a lot of my friends. Like, they'd be like, oh, well, Ben had a terrible game. He's terrible. We need a new quarterback. Be careful what you wish for. Like, sometimes you don't realize how good you have it in the moment until the moment is gone. And you're somewhere else trying to pick up the pieces of what was and realizing you're just in a state of nothingness, really. Like, they're not a Super Bowl contender. They're also not a terrible team. And if you're not either, where are you? And that's the state that they've found themselves in ever since.
You can say it's a hodgepodge of nothingness.
Indeed.
That's really what it's turned into for now a half decade. They are going into a half decade post Roethlisberger, and this is what they have gotten themselves into. It's not pretty. It is not a pretty sight. Now, Mark tacked on that final year of Ben. That counts as one of those five, but it has not been pretty. 93.7 The Fan and the Pittsburgh Pirates want to visit your teams in action for our youth baseball and softball showcase presented by Sheetz. Parents and coaches, send an email to us at youthsports@937thefan.com to register your 12 and under team, and 93.7 The Fan may make a stop to your field. Details at 937thefan.com, brought to you by Keystone Custom Apparel. I feel like I owe an apology to Cordell Stewart for the last segment, because the guy did take the Steelers to multiple AFC championship games. So kind of tough to say that it was totally the dark ages between Bradshaw and Ben. They had a few guys slip through the cracks there and have great seasons.
Yeah,
Austin. But for the most part, not pretty.
No, I mean, the 80s were the dark ages. Cordell,
Bobby Brister.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's remembering those entirely fondly, Donnie, so I think you're okay.
All right, Austin, it is time for a Bechtold breakdown.
It's
what do we got?
The Bechtold breakdown for the final Friday in March, this Friday, March 28th, 2025. Here we go. All right, let's start with Sidney Crosby and what was otherwise a disastrous game for the Penguins, giving up 7 goals in Buffalo. Crosby rewrites the history books again. He scored his 26th goal of the season and records his 20th consecutive season, his 20th season, averaging a point per game, which breaks Wayne Gretzky's all-time record. How about that?
Yeah, Gretzky, a pretty good player in his day, just to put it lightly. I mean, the consistency of Sidney Crosby is just otherworldly. And I feel like we hear about it. So, like, anytime you ask, and I know you guys have Tyler Kennedy on for a full hour on Thursdays. We have Tyler on Wednesday afternoons. Just the guy can't say enough about Sidney Crosby's career because of just how well he takes care of everything. Not just on the ice, but off the ice. That's as important as anything once an athlete gets older. I mean, the dude is still one of the best players in hockey as he gets closer and closer to 40. I've said multiple times now in the calendar year that if he really wanted to, I think Crosby could easily play until he's 45. It just all matters of, you know, if he sees his play deteriorate at all, does he want to go out while he's still kind of on top of his game? It just all depends on his mindset. But, like, you see him play in the Four Nations when he is surrounded by other greats in the game, and the guy, not only does he fit right in, he is still one of the best players on the ice. He's clearly the best player on the Penguins roster, and I know that doesn't say a ton because of what they are going through right now, but he's really the only bright light in all of Pittsburgh sports at this current moment.
And I like that on the TV broadcast, they asked him, like, say, like, what's been the key to all this? And he basically just said motivation, drive, passion for the game, hard work. Obviously, you have to be very skilled, too, to be able to accomplish something like this. But he could be the NHL's version of Brady in their modern era, where he takes care of his body so well. And, you know, knock on wood, Crosby, outside of the concussions, has stayed relatively healthy over the past X amount of years. If he wanted to do that, yes, he could, and continue to extend this record. I don't agree with the whole notion that, oh, well, you couldn't have traded Ricard Raquel because Crosby's not going to get this mark.
He was getting it no matter what. Come on.
Regardless.
Like, that almost felt disrespectful of Sidney Crosby to me.
Yes.
When people said, well, one of the reasons why we can't trade Rickard Rakell is because Crosby needs to keep his streak going. He's Sidney effing Crosby, people. I think he was going to keep the streak going no matter what. All due respect to Rickard Rakell, who is having a career year. I think Sidney Crosby makes it work with everybody. That's what makes the guy that much better. You could put whoever on his line, and he is going to make that guy a significantly better player.
And he did it
like, was Pascal Dupuis like a first line player without Sidney Crosby?
No. And even Evgeny Malkin made him a really good second line player.
But there are so many examples of flat out random dudes who can get tossed on Sidney Crosby's line and he will make them into a great player. I also can't help but wonder, Austin, what some of his numbers would look like if he didn't have the concussion issues. Because that happened like right as he was turning into, I mean, he was already a great player, but I think he was among, like, he was at his best that 2010-2011 season. He had 32 goals in 41 games in that 10-11 season. He had 66 points in 41 games. He was going to have easily his best season. He was on pace to have that points-wise because his career high is 120. He did that at 19 years old. He was well on pace to have into the 130s. That's how good of a player he was that season. And then he only played 22 games in the 11-12 season. He still had 37 points. The guy had 8 goals and 29 helpers.
He's going to end up ultimately doing it for, I think, a 21st season, a 22nd season, and maybe even a 23rd.
And you bring up the point about Brady. I'm not guaranteeing it by any means, but we saw with Brady that he was able to still be the best player and win a Super Bowl in his later years. I think Crosby can still be one of the best players, certainly the best player on his team, and very much contribute to another championship. And that's if he stays here. I think things could get ugly if he would call it quit soon. But if the guy keeps playing for another 6 or 7 or 8 years, they could rebuild with him still there, and I think he could still be a good player on their next great team.
Yeah, but Donnie, they're going to have to be bad with him, and he's going to have to be okay with them being bad for a little bit. Look, this is just the reality of it. I'm not saying all-out tank, trade every single person imaginable, don't spend any money, do stuff like that. But what I'm saying is, you know, the best way to build up this roster and be sustainable for the future and allow Sid to have that opportunity is to flounder for the rest of the year. Like, just be okay with
absolutely
that. Now, like, it might be very hard to watch a 7-3 loss where Buffalo is kicking your ass. Buffalo should not be doing that. And Tampa Bay absolutely crushing you. And that's why I think that 4-game winning streak ultimately maybe hurt them a little bit. But this year and next year, especially next season, with Gavin McKenna out there as the next, like, the next guy, the next Austin Matthews prototype, Jack Eichel prototype type of player, who maybe Connor Bedard you can even throw in there, even though he hasn't been great with Chicago. Those are the type of guys that you want to surround Sidney Crosby with. I mean, you're never going to get another Mariota Sid. It's probably never going to happen. But if you can get something as close to that, where you draft a McKenna, you get lucky in the lottery. And let's say, hypothetically, in Malkin's farewell tour next year, you know, you do move off of Erik Karlsson, you do trade Rickard Rakell in the offseason, and you're not that great. It can be like Mariota Sid in those last couple of years where it's the passing of the torch. But Sid's also a part of it. And if it turns around quicker than expected, even better news.
Yeah, you do have to have a lot of games like last night where, honestly, though, it could still work out in his favor because he can continue to score points and the Penguins lose game 7-3.
Yeah. I'd be fine with that.
Or 7-4 or 6-4. It doesn't matter.
Silver linings, I just think the step back is what they ultimately need to happen. I mean, how did they get Sid, Gino, and those guys to begin with? How did they get Mario to begin with? You know, Yager was right around that time as well when they were getting good, but they weren't there yet. Did you see what Alex Ovechkin did with Marc-Andre Fleury, the sign of respect after Washington and Minnesota played last night. Minnesota won 4-2, and Ovechkin had everyone line up just like it was the end of a playoff series and shake Fleury's hand at the end of the game at center ice. It was just Fleury. The entire Capitals team embraced Fleury at center ice. The rest of the Wild were standing right around the blue line, right by their bench, but it was really cool to see, and a long embrace from the Flower and Ovechkin at the very end of it, too. So a really fitting salute and tribute to the battles that they had over the years.
Yeah, that's really cool from Ovechkin, and you can't help but think when you see those two, one of the shining moments of the Pens Stanley Cup run in 2009, the Game 7 that they had against the Capitals, which the Penguins ended up winning in blowout fashion. We did not have to sweat that game out at all. But one of the early moments of that game, Alex Ovechkin got a breakaway. It was a one-on-one against Marc-Andre Fleury, and he was stonewalled by Fleury. And that was like the first moment in that game where, you know, everybody's tight going into a Game 7. That's the first moment in that game where anybody who was a fan or around the Penguins got the feeling they're going to win this game because our goalie just stopped the best goal scorer in a generation and the guy who will likely end up as the greatest goal scorer of all time. So yeah, that's a cool tribute there from Ovi.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome, and you know, it's just the level of respect that people have for Marc-Andre Fleury, I think is at a different level than how many athletes can you say? Like, this seems like a huge retirement tour for Fleury, where we know everything that went on in Pittsburgh, the embrace that he had here in this event last night. And it seems like everywhere Fleury goes, other teams are just, you know, taking him in and thanking him for everything as the second all-time wins leader in NHL history. So I think it's very due for him and really cool to see. Next up, how about this? In the Sweet 16 of the Pittsburgh Media March Madness bracket, Joe loves talking about this. Over 1,000 votes have already been cast. It might be the most voted on polling by the end of the day, by the end of the voting cycle. 5-seed Joe Starkey goes up against 9-seed Adam Crowley. And right now, Joe is up by about 3 votes. It's 50.1 to 49.9 in favor of Starkey.
Oh, that's,
how about that?
That one's going to be close until the bitter end. I know I was in a matchup with Bob Labriola. I must have lost. We were around 50-50 the last time I looked. I don't know what the percentages were once you got into the 10th place of the decimal. But I guess Labs must have got me at the tail end there. That's going to be a close one throughout, but I'm fearful if I'm Joe. I think that the 9-seed Crowley might be bound for the Elite Eight.
He beat you at the buzzer, Donnie, and now Labs is getting crushed by Mark Cabali.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Kaboom was going to crush either of us.
I
think he would have crushed me. He's got the McAfee bump, man.
There is a huge voting block that does love Cabali.
Yeah.
Now, will we be able to rally the troops for Starkey based on this discussion and get him to be able to push over 50.1 to get to like 55 by the end of the show?
See, here's the issue. He took this trip. He's not on air to advocate for himself.
True.
So now he's in some trouble.
Should we advocate for Crowley?
Turn our backs on Joe?
For Crowley, to vote for Crowley, everyone. I voted for Joe, even though I posed the question on Twitter. Wow, what a matchup. Should I vote for Crowley? And Joe said, I'm insulted by the question here, Limits.
I voted there for Joe, too.
Yeah, I voted for Joe. Because I know how much it means to him.
Yeah, we also know how Joe would be very upset. I don't think Crowley would care all that much.
No, I don't think entirely that Crowley would care. But nonetheless, Robert Morris, they're losing Josh Omojafo as well to their team, with Fulgaris entering the portal. Amarian Dickerson is in the portal. Cam Woods, I saw, is in the portal. Donnie, like, this is the unfortunate reality of mid-major basketball now, where these guys won the Horizon League, put up a good performance against Alabama, and now everybody's just going to try to cash in, where if this was even just a couple years ago, I feel like some of these guys would have stayed. There wouldn't be this mass exodus of everyone leaving.
Yeah, and this is what we talked about last hour. This is why I think the St. Francis thing wasn't just a one-time event. I think it was just simply the tip of the iceberg. I think it is a case of teams, programs, schools realizing, listen, we just can't keep up. We can't compete. We can't do this anymore. And, you know, plenty of schools are going to be okay with that. I understand. And maybe a team like Robert Morris could look to the St. Francis well when they tried to bring in some new players. But it does just suck because you can't help but feel for people around that program. You can't help but feel for Andy Toole, because the guy does a hell of a job at Robert Morris. And I'm sure, which in his profession, we see coaches go left and right to any better situation. And I can't speak for him, but I'm sure he has gotten contacted at least by some programs that would be a step up for him.
Oh, I'm sure of it.
Yeah. I mean, he has taken Robert Morris to the big dance multiple times now in his career there, and he has stuck with them through thick and thin. And it's unfortunate that now he has his best season, what many think could be the best season in Robert Morris basketball history, and the reward from that is, well, you're going to lose your entire roster because every single one of these guys is going to get NIL money out the ass from one of the big wigs of college athletics. And you can't, like, the thing is, you can't fault the players either. Like, they're doing what is financially best for them.
Right.
Because if somebody threw us a ton of money to go to a different school, every single one of us would do it.
Yeah, if we're being offered like $700,000, money we've never seen before, you know, money that would change our lives. Some are getting a million. Some might get more than that. Yeah, I mean, I think if you're 18, 19, 20, 21, 22 years old, you're going to immediately jump at that.
Yeah.
And that's why I think the system is broken. They got to find a way to, whether it's a one-time transfer rule, which is something I know Bill Hillgrove has proposed out there, whether it's maybe even a two-time transfer rule. Like, guys like Cam Woods have transferred like four times now. Like, that should not be happening in college sports. It shouldn't. Now, you can also throw back, well, what about coaches that just get up and leave after a year or so? Like, Darren DeVries goes to West Virginia 1 year, and then there he goes to Indiana. There's just going to be no perfect way to solve this. There's not.
Yeah, they have gotten in bed with something that I don't know if they... I don't know if it was realized at the time.
No, I'm sure it wasn't.
Given the positives that there are with NIL and the transfer portal, I don't know if they thought of all of the cons that it could bring in either.
All right, last one for you, Donnie. One of the Steelers coaches, was at Boise State Pro Day to watch Ashton Jeanty. If he was there at 21 or a couple spots before and the Steelers traded up, would you want the Steelers to make the move for Jeanty? And I'll also throw Tyler Warren out there for you.
I think Jeanty is a hell of a player for what he did at Boise State last season. I don't want the Steelers to use the first round pick on a running back again. And I get that Jeanty could maybe be viewed as a more of a Saquon or Jahmyr Gibbs type and less so a Najee Harris type. But I also think the Steelers, if they were in a different situation, it would make more sense. If we felt like a running back like this would be viewed more as a missing piece, kind of like what Jahmyr Gibbs was to the Lions offense a couple of years ago, then I would say go for it. If it seemed like they had everything else pretty much figured out and they could make a luxury pick of Ashton Jeanty, I would say go for it. But I just can't get behind it, you know, even though he was so good. Now, you bring up Tyler Warren.
Yep.
That one, interesting, because we know how much Arthur Smith loves tight ends, and I also think he's of more use in today's NFL. I think Warren is a fantastic player. I also think he should be taken in the top 10.
I agree, and if Warren is around 15, I definitely trade up for him. That's it, Donnie. The Bechtel Breakdown, sponsored by our good friends at Southside Plumbing and Heating, our good friend Jake, who I know was listening, and we got a chance to see Jake last week, which is always good to see our good buddy.
Thank you, Austin.